Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am your kidnapped feline who you say has a really distinctive collar, but I had it before you got me. Tyler Carson Evans.
And I'm your judgmental bitch of an aunt who is secretly thinking of changing her name and switching to a career in journalism, Siren Rex Neenan. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture, beginning with our in-depth review of the original Charmed series.
Today we're discussing Charmed Season 1, Episode 7, The Fourth Sister.
So my shtick of like revealing and explaining the pun behind the title is pointless for the third episode in a row.
Bummer.
The Fourth Sister refers to the key side character in this episode, a girl named Aviva who wants to be a sister of the Charmed Ones, but you know, she isn't, and she won't be. Actually, the title is pretty awkward now, considering that the Charmed Ones actually do have a fourth sister, Paige, but she won't be written in until season 4.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I think that's why I hate the title of this episode so much, because it doesn't account for
it's
Paige.
It's weird. So the first time I watched this one was on DVD, and I had watched seasons 2 and 4 on television as they aired, and then I bought season 1 because I hadn't seen it. And so when I saw this was titled The Fourth Sister, I was like, what the fuck?
According to IMDb, this episode rated 7.5 out of 10 and is the one where a troubled teenage witch, Sabrina, comes to the sisters for help and guidance, hoping that the Hallowells will become her mentors, but it transpires that the girl is an unwitting pawn in the schemes of an evil sorceress. This episode was written by Edith Swenson and directed by Gilbert Adler.
So we actually have a lot to cover in this episode. For the second episode in a row, we are dealing with an ancient and beloved goddess from another culture who has been bastardized by inept writing. It's become such a common theme, unfortunately, that we had to create an entire segment around it, which you'll get to hear soon. Oh, and in this case, she's also been whitewashed. It's super not cool.
Yeah, there's this theme in this episode that really bothers me. It's something that we've touched on in previous episodes, but it's really hammered home in this one. There's this idea that somehow hereditary witches or even just initiated witches are inherently more valid in some way than solitary practitioners. This is slowly changing in our community for sure, but it's something that I think Charmed is partly responsible for, just with that, you know, the trope of like having ancestors that practice witchcraft, so therefore your line is more powerful than somebody else who is like maybe a first generation witch.
Yeah. I don't even know if I'm confident in saying that that's necessarily changing in our culture. I think most like educated people who've been involved in witchcraft for a while kind of get over it, but it's still just a pretty prevalent trope that a lot of beginner witches seem to believe, so much so that you even see some of them sometimes claiming to, like, have these fabulous ancestral roots when their claims are a little bit suspicious.
Yeah. And it all kind of cultivates at the end of the episode when Aviva, the innocent, loses all of her magical ability and says that she's going to miss being a witch.
As if that could be taken from you.
I got news for you, Aviva girl. You still a witch. Like, and this may be a little off base and it doesn't apply to everybody, but I feel like those people, like hereditary practitioners and initiates, kind of have a distaste for solitary practitioners. And as a solitary witch, I can't tell you the amount of times I've heard other witches like spout off opinions that essentially boil down to, it doesn't apply to me, so it's obviously not really witchcraft.
How interesting.
I've seen that time and again, and I've seen it with people who are really prominent in the community right now. And the point is that being of a tradition or having ancestors in Salem where there weren't actually witches anyway doesn't determine your worthiness of witchhood.
Yeah. I've literally seen people claim that, like, they can date their lineage back to, like, Sarah Good or something like that.
Oh my god.
Who was one of the first women executed in the Salem witch trials. And, like, I mean, sure, she's someone's ancestor out there, probably a lot of people. But she was not a witch.
No, she wasn't.
She was not. So that actually dates your ancestral line back to persecution and bigotry. Yeah. Not so much witchcraft.
Yeah. It just, it's something that really bothers me. And it's something that is really prevalent in this episode specifically, where it's just like they are so dismissive of, especially Prue in this episode, granted for good reason, but it, she's so dismissive of Aviva as a witch.
See, no, I get what you're saying, but I'm also, like, so with Prue on this episode because this teenager is just, like, storming into her life and being super dramatic, and Prue is like, I am literally trying to get dicked down right now, and I don't have time for this. So, yeah, Prue is upset.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm not really on Prue's side in this one, but when you put it that way, I'm inclined to agree with her a little bit more.
Yeah, right? You get it. So I think connected to this theme of looking down on solitary witches, there's also this pervasive theme throughout the episode that witchcraft is dangerous.
Yes.
And that one so gets on my nerves. Like, basically, the point is that Aviva gets involved in witchcraft. She gets tricked into doing the bidding of an evil spirit. And, of course, it goes badly for her. And that's just not really what witchcraft is all about. And I will say that when you are new to it, and especially if you're a teenager, you might do some dumb things and have a lot of silly ideas that you will outgrow as you get older. Like, we've all been there. Like, I thought and did some pretty stupid shit when I was a 14-year-old witch. But nothing that I did had, like, lasting permanent ramifications on my life, such as getting involved with a demon who was dangerous for my soul. You know, like, it's that's like a silly, stupid myth that honestly I think ties back into the same elitism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, more experienced witches want to look down on other people who are new to witchcraft and tell them that they're stupid and they don't know what they're doing and haha, they're going to get themselves hurt and don't they deserve it for not being us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's gross and there's no place for it in modern witchcraft. And not only with sort of the elitism that we experience in this episode, there's also a lot of, like, queer undertones with this one. Now, there isn't a lot of information out there about why there are no outright LGBTQ plus characters on this show until much later. But even then, they exist to be the butt of a joke or as an inconsequential plot device. I did, however, learn when I was researching this episode that a character that we meet later in the series, Tyler Michaels, a young Firestarter, is gay in the comic book series that follows the end of the show.
I did know that, and I think it's really cool, and it almost makes me want to read the comics.
Yeah, me too. I think that's really cool that they did that afterwards.
Yeah.
Way after the fact.
Well, I think it's actually pretty telling. Obviously, it's weird that this show takes place in San Francisco and has virtually no queer characters. I had someone I went to college with. He lived in San Francisco for a while, and then we met up again, and he told me about it, and he said you basically can't turn a corner in San Francisco without running headfirst into a drag queen. So, it's a little weird that this show is so heterosexual all the time. But we're gonna get into that more as we go through the scene by scene. And just like Tyler said, the gay stuff is either innuendo and thickly veiled or the butt of a joke, and that's really all there is.
Yeah, thank God that we have better representation in the reboot, honestly.
For real.
All right, do you want to start the scene by scene?
Let's get into it. All right, so this episode opens in Aviva's bedroom, and like we explained, Aviva is the young, troubled teenage witch who gets involved with the charmed ones. In this one, Aviva is all set up to do a ritual. She has her altar cloth, her circle of candles, her goddess figurine. It's very aesthetic, very Instagram.
Too many candles.
I knew you were going to say there were too many candles.
There are too many candles.
Literally every time I watch something now, and the only thing I watch is shows about witchcraft. Every time I watch anything, I just have this voice in the back of my head now. It's like, oh, Tyler would think there's too many candles.
Honestly, I just saw on Instagram that one of those, like, TikTok witches almost fucking burned down her house because she left a spell with candles going. And I was like, this proves my point.
Well, you don't just leave them lit and unattended. That's common sense.
Well, apparently not everybody has that.
Okay, leaving candles unattended should not be a central part of your witchcraft. It's the craft of the wise people. Okay, so anyway. So Aviva conjures Kali, who appears in the mirror as an angelic-looking white woman.
Wow.
Aviva says she's done as Kali asked. She's been stalking the Halliwell sisters. Kali says to be patient and get ready to make the Halliwell sisters want her. They talk about Aviva's mom, who may or may not be doing well, and Aviva hasn't seen her. Then Kali offers Aviva a power. Aviva reaches for the mirror and her hands glow. Kali instructs Aviva to approach the sisters. As Aviva leaves the room, Kali becomes wreathed in flame, and her eyes glow red, signifying that, gasp, she is actually evil.
I kind of thought it made her look like she had jaundice.
Oh, well, evil and jaundice.
Also, Aviva, in her, like, just little bit that we've seen her, even without her magical powers, is doing more legit things than the Charmed Ones ever do. Just like the witch that gets murdered in the pilot.
Right off the bat, I identify with Aviva. Especially when I first watched the episode and I was much younger. Because, you know, okay, so she's got, like, the witch aesthetic going on, but it also looks very, like, cheap and thrift store, and, like, this is what she could find, this is what she could pull together. And I like that, because that's for real. That's legit. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't all always have money for all this stuff, all this witchcraft stuff to have all the time. And those of us that do have probably slowly been building it up for years.
Yeah.
So I just think her sitting on the floor and appealing to a deity and having her candles lit and getting her meditation on. I think she's cool. Like, I've been there.
Yeah, I really identify with Aviva in this episode because she's, you know, does her thing by herself and doesn't have quote-unquote magical powers of her own, you know, like.
And also the fact that she has to, like, hide it from her aunt.
Oh, yeah, you've been there.
Like, I have so been there. I've so been there. Oh my gosh. Like, keeping it a secret in my bedroom, having to hide everything in the closet when I'm done. Yeah, girl, I've been there.
So as Siren said, this is the third episode we reviewed so far that has contained an inaccurate portrayal of a deity. And that's why we've created our new segment, You Must Be Myth Taken. Wrong!
I can't think of a million reasons.
You Must Be Myth Taken is the segment where we take some time to set the record straight about deities and other myths that have been misrepresented in media. And the star of today's segment is the Hindu goddess Kali.
The Kali we see in this episode is some spooky white bitch trapped in a mirror. She has this, like, angelic appearance at first with a white robe and blonde hair and this sparkly blue background, and she'll occasionally reveal her true face, which is not super different, but then her background is on fire and she has pink eye and
evil jaundice
and evil pink eye, and she has the ability to grant a witch the power to throw fire and manipulate that fire ability in a whole bunch of wild different fucking ways, and I'm gonna talk about when we get there. And she can possess anyone who touches her mirror. She's described as an evil spirit in one part, and then as a sorceress in another scene, and literally none of this has anything to do with the mythological figure Kali.
None whatsoever. So everything we just told you about the Kali who appears in this episode, forget it. Because she is not Kali. Let's talk about the actual Kali. Kali is the Hindu goddess of destruction, death, war, and time. Kali is written about as having pitch black skin, black like the night sky without stars. Although in art, she's often depicted as having blue skin. But apparently, oftentimes in Hindu art, That blue color was used to signify that the deity was actually black. But the bottom line is, she's never been white. She's never, ever, ever been white. Kali is not white. So you got that one pretty flippin' wrong. Actually, few Hindu deities are ever depicted as white. Because, get this, they are Hindu deities, and they are from India and areas in Asia.
People where are not white.
White people are not in charge of everything. So the golden colors of the deity's skin sort of reflect, I don't know, the colors of the skin of the people who worship them. The bottom line is Hindu deities are not white.
They're not white.
Depending on what form she's in, Kali has either 4, 6, or 10 arms. A lot of Hindu deities have more than 2 arms, and it sort of signifies their power, their ability, much like having multiple arms would give you more abilities. Actually, just yesterday, my roommate and I were talking about how if I had 6 arms, I would pet all of our animals at once. And then I would hold, like, a piece of pizza in one of my hands, and then probably my phone in the other one. So, Kali wears a necklace made of the skulls of demons that she has vanquished, and she often holds another severed head and a blade. Her other 2 arms, because, you know, she always has at least 4, are often depicted holding all sorts of things. Sometimes it's a bowl that blood from the severed head is dripping into. Oh. Sometimes she holds flowers to signify her, like, balance, that she's not just death and destruction.
See, I didn't know the vanquishing demon part, and I also didn't know about the holding the flowers part, so that's cool.
Yeah. She's very complex.
I mean, I feel like a lot of the deities that we've talked about so far, even though this is just becoming a segment, but I feel like a lot of the things that we've talked about so far are a lot more nuanced than what we get shown in Charmed.
That's absolutely true.
What a shock, right? So Kali is often really misunderstood by Western culture because of our, like, just debilitating fear of death and dying. And many non-Hindus see her as an evil figure, but that's just not true. Many Hindu deities exist in a triplicity of creation, preservation, and destruction, and each of these concepts is essential to the maintenance of the universe. So while Kali is a goddess of destruction, that doesn't mean that she's evil. In many of Kali's stories, it's actually hordes of demons that she's slaying in order to protect humans. Kali's not a peaceful goddess. She does do violence unto things that threaten those she is sworn to protect. And that does frighten followers of Judeo-Christian religions who are taught to turn the other cheek, but that doesn't make her evil.
When I was first getting really into Hindu mythology, which was inspired by Kali, absolutely, I thought the concept of creation, preservation, and destruction was really interesting. It sort of reminds me of the maiden mother crone thing, but instead of having to do with age and stereotypes about age, it's more of a function that makes sense. Like, we're basically talking about rebirth, life, and death.
Yeah.
As the triplicity. And I think that's really cool.
That's an interesting connotation to put on it. I guess I didn't make that connection, actually.
It exists more with their myths about goddesses than it does about gods, but that's not always true. A lot of times, the 3 goddesses who exist in a triplicity will all have male or god consorts who hold the same position in a masculine triplicity of creation, preservation, and destruction. These qualities are not tied to gender or age or any other thing. They're just sort of seen as, like, the cycle of the universe. So to say that Kali is a goddess of destruction, I'm just going to echo this, does not make her evil, because the way Hinduism sees that concept is so vastly different than the way Judeo-Christian religions see that concept.
Absolutely. Kali is still really important to a lot of Hindus, as well as Buddhists, Taoists, and followers of Shinto, and many Wiccans and other neo-pagans. However, I do want to say here that there are some who consider the use of this deity in Hindu deities as a whole, outside of the culture and religions that they're associated with, cultural appropriation. That's a super fine line to walk these days, honestly. But it's important to respect and research where these myths originate from before deciding to incorporate them into your practice. It's definitely a mistake that I personally have made in the past. But as witches, I think it's important to talk about it because we have to approach everything, especially things that don't belong to us, from a place of respect and not just to serve our own purposes.
I do agree that cultural appropriation is important and that we should care about it. However, I also think that the term gets overused and applied to harmless things, and that sort of diminishes and trivializes things that are actually harmful.
Yeah.
If you think that people who were not raised in one of those religions should not worship her, I can't take that belief away from you. But I flat out don't agree with it. And I will tell you why.
Please do.
I have seen a lot of comments out there where people are basically saying that if you are white, then you must stick with deities who were only worshipped by white cultures. And anything else is cultural appropriation. And I 100% disagree with that.
Oh, I disagree with that too.
Because that to me is literally racism, okay? If you told white people you cannot value the contributions of people of color in politics, law, technology, art, that they should just completely avoid and ignore people of color who've contributed to those fields, that would be racism. But suddenly, when it's religion, it's cultural appropriation. That is bullshit. That so completely misses the mark.
I definitely agree with that perspective. It's just, you know, I do think that when you approach something that is so heavily involved in another culture, that you have to make sure it's from a place of respect in order to not appropriate it. Right?
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree.
And there's this concept where it's like, especially with modern witchcraft in the way that it exists, especially on social media right now, a lot of new witches are kind of just slapping whatever name they want to on whatever they want to. And that's not how you should go about it in terms of working with something that is not directly related to your culture.
Well, it just has so much potential to offend people.
Yeah.
And I think that provided those people aren't like capitalist pigs making your life harder, you should try not to offend other people with whatever you're doing. So I just sort of have this like basic philosophy on dealing with deities, which is don't ask for favors from someone that you haven't taken the time to get to know. If you're going to include a deity in your practice, then actually learn about who they are, get into their mythology, know about them. It's sort of just like if I went over to some stranger's house who I didn't know and asked them to help me with something. They might do it if they're really kind, but they also might just be like, who the fuck are you? Get off my doorstep.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's how I feel about that.
I definitely agree with you. I agree with you, and I agree that the term is overused. Mm-hmm. And it makes me trepidatious to, like, do anything sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, see, this episode is a great way for us to really kind of tell the difference. So if, say, I'm a writer on a TV show, and I take a popular and beloved Hindu goddess who is 10,000 times older than I am, and I completely misrepresent her, and then I put that out into the world for other people to see and learn incorrect things from, and whitewash her, that is cultural appropriation.
Yes.
I think we can safely say that what is going on with Kali in this episode is 100% cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
However, if I, actual me, Simon Rex Neenan, hey there, if I, as a white person, learn about Kali and love her and love what Hindus have created with the concept of their triplicity that doesn't teach me to fear death. If I take that and I love it and I incorporate belief in Kali into my system, I don't think that that is cultural appropriation because I am not lying about her. I'm not spreading misinformation about her and I'm not taking something away from other people. If I decide to believe in Kali, it does not remove the ability of some Hindu to believe in her. I have not taken her away from them.
Absolutely. Agree 100%. It definitely, bringing it up adds into this conversation that we're having, and it adds into this segment, I think, in just being able to tell the difference. So
it didn't occur to me before when we were deciding to create this segment, but I think basically every time we do it, it's going to be about cultural appropriation. So anyway, I'm really glad that we had that conversation, but it was also super unplanned and unscripted, and we have barely gotten into the episode. So
yeah.
I would just like to cap off the first segment of You Must Be Myth-Taken with my feelings about naming this character Kali. Obviously, the evil spirit mirror sorceress has nothing to do with the Hindu Kali. And Kali is not a common name, okay? It's not even a common name among Hindu cultures because she's so revered.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they choose to name this villain that name? And I think the ultimate answer is literally just they associated the name with evil, so they thought it would fit their evil character. And that sucks.
That does really suck.
It just sucks.
Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
At the manor, Piper has missing cat flyers and is objectifying Leo's ass. Relatable Aren't content. Yeah. I would absolutely get handy with that man. Phoebe joins in the ogling and says that Piper says that Leo is looking for Kit, and the cat is very obviously not stuck in the fucking chimney, Leo. But this was clearly just a bit for them to be able to stare at Leo's butt.
Basically, can you imagine being Edith Swenson, I guess is her name? She's like, how can I have Brian Krause just put his ass in the air? I know. He'll look for the cat up the chimney. I don't believe Edith Swenson has either a cat or a chimney, but whatever.
He does have a good butt, I will say. That is a good tush.
Yeah, Brian Krause is a fucking fox. Anyway.
Yeah. Outside, Leo puts up flyers. There's a continuity error here that I did not notice, but Siren is just great at catching things. The Charmed One's address on the flyer is 7571 Prescott Street, but later on it's 1329 Prescott Street. Which, why? Why did they do that? Why did they change the address?
I mean, I imagine it was probably just a different writing team who didn't know to pay attention to a detail like that.
They didn't watch the show before.
Yeah, I do have to admit, though, that Siren didn't catch this so much as the good people at charmedfandom.com caught this.
That's a good one. I go to that one when I do research for this, too. Whilst all of this is happening, Aviva the spy is watching from her car. And she stares at one of the flyers and sets it on fire. And her power doesn't make sense in this episode to me. All of the different stuff that she does with it is,
it like, just works in, like, a million different ways. Aviva has gone from troubled teenage witch to master pyromancer overnight.
It probably doesn't make sense because she's not a real witch.
Oh, could be that.
You know. All right, and then we have the opening credits.
All right, so now in the kitchen, Piper is making cinnamon rolls and a glass of milk. She does not put the milk away, which really bothers me. She just leaves it on the counter.
Ew.
And you're supposed to be a chef, Piper. Let's talk about health code violations. She delivers the food and milk to Leo, who is... he was working on something. I don't know. He's on a ladder. Who knows what he's doing?
I think he's staining the doorways. He's staining the trim on the doorways.
Because he is a full-surface handyman, okay? He is eye candy, he stains your trim, and he is also a missing cat detective. So Prue and Phoebe come downstairs and they're talking about dating Andy, blah, 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 dating Andy, blah, heterosexuality, blah.
Yeah.
Piper and Phoebe are both start flirting with Leo because they were both looking at his ass earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Prue is like, oh, you dumb slut. And she pulls Phoebe into the kitchen to tell her This is literally from my notes that I wrote when I was feeling some type of way. She pulls her into the kitchen to tell her she's a no-good slutbag hoe boyfriend stealer. And then Piper walks in and says, yeah, that's basically what you are. Yeah. So then they team up on Phoebe and they rehash her being a slut when she was like a teenager. And, okay, so anyway. So then Prue is like, anyway, I need both of you to get out of this enormous house this evening. This house that we call a manor. I need the entire damn house to have a date with Andy. That is something... Okay, this episode is kind of ridiculous, but the episode basically existed to create tension between Prue and Andy to ultimately lead to their breakup. Spoilers.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of it just seems like it didn't need to happen, but they really just wanted to steer them away from each other. I don't know.
Everything that happens that makes Prue cancel on Andy are not... pressing issues.
Completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. So anyway, then Piper and Phoebe basically agree that they're going to fight over Leo and it's all in good fun.
Yeah, that's going to turn out really well for them, I think. So in the next scene, we're in Aviva's room and she's being all emo and writing in her journal. And she's like, dear diary, life sucks here.
I know that that's super lame, but also like big mood, you know?
Yeah. Her Aunt Jackie barges in to belittle her, essentially, and then play the victim. And Aunt Jackie, as we all know, is absolutely not Elise, the editor of the Bay Mirror. No.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, anyway. And they discuss how Aviva's mom is struggling with addiction, and Jackie storms out, giving no indication of why she stormed in.
For real, though. Okay, do you not, like, automatically hate Aunt Jackie?
I mean, she is definitely a middle-class white woman.
And not just that, though. This scene, like, really struck a chord with me. Just, I don't know, adults, like, barging in to tell you that you suck when all you want to do is, like, sit in the dark and write in your journal and cast spells. Like, I just really get this, I don't know, this whole episode probably just strikes a little too close to home.
Yeah.
For me, with disapproving, bitchy Aunt Jackie.
The actress who plays Aunt Jackie is, and Elise later, is Rebecca Balding, who is the wife of charm producer James L. Conway. I never actually knew that. That's really an interesting fact.
Well, there was a hint about it in, like, a way, way future episode where she talks shit about her quote-unquote ex-husband and calls him by name.
Oh.
But she says James L. Connors. What a schmuck.
Oh my god.
If you watch the special features on the last disc of the season 8 box set, there's this part where someone is talking about the fact that she's James L. Conway's wife. One of the charm producers, I forget which one, but then they're like, she must have been sleeping with someone to get her job.
That's hilarious. I do, however, I do want to talk about the difference in the way that Jackie and Aviva refer to her mother's condition. Now, this was a really minor plot point of the episode, but it really struck a chord with me. My family has a really long history of substance abuse problems, and as such, addiction is something that I'm pretty familiar with. And Aviva is much more aware of what is going on and how to talk about it than how she's written for us to think about her. Because I understand both sides of what is happening here. I have been the sibling of an addict and the child of an addict. There are phases of grief that come along with loving someone who has an addiction. And sometimes that comes in the form of having a savior complex. And I think Jackie might feel like she failed her sister, that she couldn't save her in some way. And now she's trying to make up for that by saving her niece, but going about it the wrong way and not being able to connect with her because she's not understanding what it feels like to have a parent that is in that situation. And Aviva doesn't see it, partly because she's an angsty teenager, but also because she loves and misses her mom. And her mom is sick, and Aviva understands that her mother has a disease, and that's what is responsible for the situation that she's in. And she doesn't blame her mom, but she's grieving who she wants her mother to be. And it's created this disconnect between the two of them because they're facing, like, two completely different sides of the same problem.
That was a very good, nuanced explanation of the situation. I appreciate that a lot because I did not put that much thought into it at all.
It really, like, struck a chord with me. I really identify with Aviva, too. I've been in those shoes. I feel like she's written for us to just be like, oh, she's an annoying, angsty brat. But she's, like, going through stuff.
I don't really see her that way.
I don't either.
I did think that her analysis of what addiction is coming out of her mouth on screen was pretty progressive.
Yeah.
For 98. And I don't know what it says about it that it was coming from her, who we're sort of supposed to see as, like, immature and being duped and stuff. But yeah. I still appreciated what she had to say.
Me too.
About addiction. Absolutely. I want to cap this off with talking about what we learned about Aviva in the scene and how it makes perfect sense to me that she's turned to witchcraft. So, Aviva has been living with her mother, who struggled with addiction. Now her mom is in rehab, and she's living with her aunt, who's kind of mean to her, and they fight a lot, and she's really unhappy. In addition, she feels outcast because she's kind of a goth, you know? Mm-hmm. So she has all these, like, real-life problems going on, and she's a teenager. She feels helpless. She can't save her mom. She can't get out of her aunt's apartment. She just moved and doesn't have any friends.
Yeah.
So she turns to witchcraft to feel a sense of empowerment, to try to rise above these problems that are bigger than her. And that is really one of the big reasons that a lot of teenagers start learning about witchcraft. I know that it was for me.
Yeah, me too.
So in this sense, the picture we're being painted of Aviva is actually very realistic, which is why I find the way they talk about her and the way that her getting involved in witchcraft is portrayed as a problem to be so insulting.
Yeah.
Because witchcraft got me through the worst years of my life. It didn't do anything like what we're about to see here.
Yeah. I credit witchcraft for my ability to deal with all of the things that have happened in my life 100%, and to see this girl who is turning to it for comfort and empowerment to be taken advantage of in the way that she is just incredibly disappointing, because for a show that's supposed to be about what witchcraft is, that's not what witchcraft is.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to be confronting a pattern of Charmed treating characters who are closer to actual witches as basically just victims and jokes.
It's really unfortunate.
And that's definitely what's going on here. So anyway, let's move on. Okay, so Andy and Prue are now at the video store looking for a movie to watch tonight. And this weirdly helpful clerk who sort of acts like he's running a strange crowdsource service or, like, guest starring on Shark Tank or something like that, starring in an infomercial. I don't know. It was strange.
It was really weird.
Like, it was like suddenly we walked into a commercial. But he offers to help them. Video paralysis. You are just a few minutes away from leaving without a rental. Can I help? What the fuck?
What the fuck? I mean, video stores are a thing of the past at this point, so.
That's true. This scene also totally dates the show.
Yeah.
You know, my local Blockbuster, not Blockbuster, my local Family Video just recently closed. And when I realized they were still open, I was like, what the fuck? And then I realized they were selling CBD products.
That'll keep you in business. That'll keep you in business.
Anyway. All right. So while the clerk is looking for a video for them to watch, Andy just casually, massive aggressively, brings up the fact that Prue always bails on him, and they're probably not going to watch the move anyway. And then Prue is like, I do not, even though I totally do. The clerk comes back and proposes they watch a movie called Body Heat. I've never seen that. Do you know what it is?
I don't know what it is. I assume it was made up, but...
Oh, that's possible. It's completely irrelevant. I was just curious.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of a pun later because it burns up.
Oh, you're right.
Next, we get this short little scene of Aviva chatting with Kali in the mirror again, and she tells Aviva to try to gain the Charmed One's trust, and Callie opens Aviva's closet and their fucking cat is in there. And Aviva just like picks up the little kitty like they're friends and not like she's its kidnapper.
That is completely unbelievable. Not a single one of my cats is typically nice to another person while they're in their own house. But if they appeared in a stranger's closet, I know for a fact that they would not be nice about it. Okay, so back at the manor, now Piper is checking out Leo while he's staining something. Piper, she decides to ask Leo to go to a movie, but Leo just wants to talk about the house. Then Aviva shows up with the cat, and Phoebe is there, and she's super stoked. Oh my god, the cat's back. I swore it was in the chimney. And so they let Aviva into the house. Aviva says she just found the cat, but she also fed her. And the sisters are kind of like, huh? You're sketch. But okay. Mostly Piper and Phoebe just want to fuck Leo, so they're kind of over the cat. They're just sort of like, oh, the cat's back. Then they put her down. That was nonsense to me. If one of my cats had been missing, I would be pulling out my fucking hair, calling the police, storming into other people's houses.
It would be
a
modern day witch hunt, but for cats.
Yeah, basically. Okay, so then Prue and Andy show up, and Prue is like, guys, I thought I told you to get the fuck out. Andy and I are having sex in every room of the manor tonight. Prue tries to just give Aviva money and tell her to go away. And then Aviva says, no, we have to talk. I want to talk about Wicca.
Now, I both enjoy and dislike the choice of the word Wicca here. Because here's the thing. They use the word Wicca, but they call themselves witches. And that's fine, because a lot of Wiccans practice witchcraft. But they don't ever call themselves Wiccans. Have you ever noticed that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Charmed Ones are absolutely not Wiccans. I think you could say that Aviva is a Wiccan.
Yeah.
Probably. Or close to it.
It seems as though a lot of the stuff that she does is very Wicca-esque. And this is a thing that fantasy shows in this time period did a lot, using Wicca as like a substitute for the word witchcraft.
Like, it's basically a synonym. Like, they're the same thing.
Yeah. And I do that too, to be completely honest. Part of it is because shows like this do it, and I grew up watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Charmed, and so it's sort of in my brain to do that sometimes. And sometimes it's like maybe to make it more palatable for new people that I meet. Wicca is a little bit more commonplace knowledge than witchcraft, because that conjures up, you know, sacrificial images to some people and things of that nature. But also just like for me on my path, and this doesn't apply to everyone, this is just a me thing. It's a Tyler thing. It's nobody else's path thing. Don't come for me. Don't read me. But for me, it's kind of true. Like, because a lot of my, I don't identify as a Wiccan per se, but my witchcraft and my path is very like Wicca flavored. And so it makes sense for me to do that sometimes, even though I'm not a Wiccan. It's not entirely inaccurate for the way that I practice to say that about myself.
Mm-hmm. So for just way too long, for an embarrassingly long amount of time, I thought that Wicca, witchcraft, and paganism were all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I understand that they're not, and how silly it is to think so, I just can't abide stuff like this anymore. And I honestly sort of think that, not sort of, I don't know why I keep qualifying myself. I totally think that shows like this are actually really responsible, in a sense, for creating that misunderstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely the fault of this show, and of shows like it, to create that misunderstanding and that misrepresentation.
Although I will tell you, there are also some Wiccan authors out there who are really also definitely to blame for me thinking that. I'm not going to name them at the moment, but just stop it.
Yeah, they're different things. They're different things for different people. Sometimes they're interchangeable terms for some people, but that does not apply to everyone, and you should not market it that way. Because Wicca is not at all what this show is about.
No, that's the bottom line here. Calling anything the Charmed Ones do Wicca is incorrect.
All right. So Aviva starts to, like, demonstrate her powers to try to get them to let her stay. And
but they want to kick her out.
They want to kick her out real bad because they're all horny. They're all horny and she's in the way. And I mean, I can relate to that.
Well, okay. I mean, yeah, that's a fun way to say it. But they want to kick her out because they think, shit, she's about to expose our secret. She said Wicca, even though we're not Wiccans.
Yeah. Yeah. They're freaking out because she's brought up the W word, but just the wrong one. She starts to demonstrate her powers. Piper is like, let me freeze the room real quick. And you can see Leo sort of like wobble in the background when he's supposed to be frozen. And that's something that, like, there are a few different times throughout the show when Piper freezes the room and like people are acting like they're frozen, where you can like see them blinking or mm-hmm. like things like that. That happens a lot.
That has to be like a difficult power to work with, though, in terms of cinematography. So while Tyler is correct, you can see Leo move while he's supposed to be frozen in this scene, I think overall, for the amount of times they pulled that stunt, like, they do a pretty good job of
it. I think so, too. Yeah. Most of the time, it looks fine. But there's that every once in a while, they'll, like, pan a little too close to somebody, and you can just see a little issue with it. But this is another example of Aviva's powers being fucking wild and of great magnitude for me when she starts popping the popcorn from across the room.
What? There's, like, no fire flying out of her hands. She's just like, oh, I've decided it's really hot right over there, and I have perfect aim.
But it's important to point out that when Piper freezes the room, Aviva does not freeze. She's like, oh, that's really cool. Wicked cool power, guys. And
it doesn't make any sense, because the rule, the cockamamie rule, is that good witches don't freeze. And, I mean, first of all, like, what are good and evil, really? can't even get into that. But, okay, so her powers, her fire powers, come from an evil source, this Kali.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't freeze. Well, Aviva herself isn't evil, though. Aviva is being manipulated by an evil spirit. But I took it to mean that, like, with or without powers, because her powers are from an evil source, that Aviva is a perfectly valid witch, because she didn't freeze.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. It's just, it doesn't really, there's no continuity at all.
No.
Here. We have other characters later who they'll describe as quote-unquote non-magical witches. I really love that one. I would love for a bitch to call me that. those kind of people do freeze, because, you know, they're not real. But then if Aviva didn't have her firepower from Kali, we can assume that she probably would have frozen, because she'd be a non-magical witch. But then, so she does have this power, but it comes from evil, but that means that she's a good witch. It's just all very
It's very confusing.
But the point is that she doesn't freeze. And she's like, hey, that power's totally cool. And then Prue is like, you are not totally cool, and you have to get out of my house. All of you have to get out of my house, actually, because I'm trying to have a date. Yeah, so this pisses Aviva off, and so she sets the movie in Prue's hand on fire. I don't know why Prue is still holding the movie.
I don't know.
This entire time.
I don't ever hold stuff for that long.
I know, right? Like, I would have thrown it on the floor. But yeah, so Prue's holding the movie they're supposed to watch in her hand. Aviva sets it on fire. The room unfreezes, and popcorn explodes everywhere. And it's super awkward.
Aviva is talking to Kali again in the next scene about how she totally fucked up. And Kali's like, does Prue suck? And Aviva's like, yeah, she's awful, and I wish she was dead. Well, she doesn't say that yet. And Aviva's like, yeah, she sucks. She's the worst. And Kali's like, I know. And Kali tells her to target Phoebe instead. And this is sort of where we start to get those, like, gay undertones when Phoebe and Aviva start to hang out.
A little bit. But also, I think it's funny that even Kali knows that Phoebe is the screw-up.
Phoebe is useless. Kali also says that Prue is the strongest. And my question is why. I don't understand the all about Prue thing, and I never really paid that much attention to it until we started doing this show, and I just don't understand why she's the most powerful.
They always refer to Prue as the strongest. I mean, It's sort of in a... So basically calling Prue the strongest is basically saying that they prioritize violence. Because Prue is the one who has the power to do the most damage to anyone that they're fighting.
I mean, for now.
Piper's power is strategic, and Phoebe's power is sort of like reconnaissance.
Yeah, it's like... Prue is offense, Piper is defense, and then Phoebe is, like, preemptive.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
Even though she's stupid. The actual point of the show should be that it's their different strengths together that make them an unstoppable team. And I really felt like that's what Constance was going for when she created their powers the way that she did. But the other writers took it in this direction of, really, Prue is the strongest.
Yeah. So, yeah, that sucks. I hate that. But Aviva is starting to be suspicious of Kali's motives in this scene. And she's like, what do you get out of this? I don't understand why you're helping me. And Kali is like, I want some more power. And that's the end of the scene, essentially.
Well, it's really awkward, though, because Kali basically says, those witches are stupid right now, and I want you to help me steal their magic. And then Aviva's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
That was a spot-on impression.
Well, I have watched this show roughly 27 times.
Oh, my God. It's your turn. Talk about the next scene.
Okay. All right. So, anyway, so it's the next morning. Prue and Andy are on the phone talking about how Prue kicked Andy out last night after all the drama. Andy is pissed, understandably, and they plan to have another date tonight. Now, I'm going to cover this right now, and interestingly enough, you're going to hear me cover the exact same fucking shit in about 15 minutes. This is what is so dumb about this episode, is they really just want Prue and Andy to break up. Okay, so I get it, the movie melted and everything, but basically we're being told that after Aviva left the house, that Prue kicked Andy out and they didn't have their date. Why?
Why? The Aviva thing was not a pressing issue. It was not a pressing issue.
And then clearly they didn't, like, even talk about it last night because they're about to talk about it this morning. So, like, what was the point of that?
Who knows? Who absolutely knows what the point of it was?
It doesn't make any sense. It still goes back to, I don't understand why they can't have a date if their sisters are home. Like, I have a house much smaller than theirs. And if my roommate's boyfriend comes over, I'm not going to leave. I'm just not going to literally be in their bedroom watching them.
Right.
It's not a big deal.
No, it's not at all. The Prue-Annie storyline is annoying and stupid.
It's really bad in this
episode.
As
per usual, because heterosexual relationships are boring.
Is that what it is? Is it because they're straight? Because, like, if I had a guy coming over and this other witch showed up, I mean, well, I guess it would just go totally different. Like, she would show up and I would say to my guy, I'd be like, I don't really know this witch, so let's just get rid of her and then we can fuck. And then my roommates are all here.
Yeah, I... See, the whole, like, being in the broom closet thing for them just complicates everything so much.
Yeah, just come out already.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to be like, hey, listen, I can freeze things and move things and see the future. They can just be like, hey, I'm kind of a witch sometimes.
I guess that would be really awkward with Andy, though. I mean, Prue would be like, so, I'm a witch. And then Andy would be like, oh, so you mean, like, that stuff that's involved in all these murders I never solved that you're always there for?
True.
So I guess there's that.
So the sisters are talking about Aviva, and Prue is not about it. She wants her gone. She doesn't want to deal with her. And Phoebe wants to hang out with her. And Piper is like, you know, it would be kind of cool because she's the first good witch we've ever run across. And this, again, just gives me that, like, the she's different from us and our craft, so obviously fuck her. Kind of a vibe.
Yeah, it does. It's also their stereotypical responses to everything, though. Did you notice that? Prue's in denial, Phoebe's excited, Piper has mixed feelings. It's how they deal with everything.
But it's how they deal with everything. It's a wonder if they get anything fucking done. But the phone rings after everyone has left the room, and it's Aviva. And Phoebe goes to meet Aviva at school, and Aviva dips out and calls Prue a bitch. And I wish I could have cut school like that when I was in high school. I wish there was a way for me to just, like, dip out of my school, but there was not. I didn't have, like, an outdoor period in the way that she's just, like, chilling outside.
Yeah. Who had that? Nobody.
Nobody had that. I guess it's pretty common in California, though, because, like, in between their school buildings, like, they have separate buildings for their high schools.
Because it's always, like, nice there and shit.
Yeah, so they don't have to put everything...
Like, you don't do that in the Midwest.
No. Uh-uh.
There is snow on the ground and blizzards in the sky for 95% of the school year. Like, you just don't do that.
No. I also lived, like, way out in the middle of nowhere in high school, so I couldn't have gotten home even if I did dip out of school, so... Until I got the ability to drive and had off-campus lunch, and then one time I went home for lunch and didn't go back, so...
Yeah, even if I had cut school, really the only place for me to go would be, like, Walmart or church.
Not doing that. All right, and then we go to Quake. You want to talk about what happens at Quake?
Yeah. Okay, so now we're at Quake and Piper's at work. Leo comes by to show her some stain samples because he only cares about the house, even though she wants to get dicked down desperately. Okay. She's putting the moves on him real hard. She's like, oh, I would like to cook for you. And except I'm not really going to cook. I'd like to order for you and pay for it. Is that good enough?
It's good enough for me.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Give me some Chipotle and I'm...
I'll go on a date with Piper. Chipotle, you cheap ass.
I mean, maybe not Chipotle because nothing could happen after Chipotle.
Yeah, there's no way you're bottoming after that. So Leo says this thing about how cooks were second in the Mayan hierarchy and Piper is like, oh my god. You know about Mayans. That is so fucking hot. I guess Mayans, like, were a big deal back then, though, because, you know, they were predicting that we would all die in the year 2000, back in 1999.
I guess so.
But, yeah. So, anyway. So then this thing happens. Leo asks if Phoebe also works at the restaurant, and Piper says, no, she's probably at her gay and lesbian group right now. Ha ha. It was such a... It's like, it is funny, but it's not.
It's... I guess. Yeah.
The way that Piper says it is really funny to me. Because, you know, she's just trying to, like, make Leo not interested in Phoebe.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. But the point is, it's ultimately using homosexuality as the butt of a joke. Even though it's kind of a funny joke, it's less funny by the context of the show that doesn't really allow for gay and lesbian characters.
That. Very that. Very... Very that. After that, we transition into the next scene, and Phoebe is showing Aviva around the house, and Aviva is, like, totally flirting with her.
She really is. It gets real gay real fast.
It gets real gay real fast. And Phoebe's like, how the feck did you know I was a witch? Aviva says she has a teacher who we know is Kali, and Aviva's like, anyway, let's go to your room because I want to show you something. And then Aviva says some, like, goth shit about her soul being black or whatever.
Like her lipstick.
Yeah.
And again, mood.
And then Prue comes home, and Phoebe and Aviva are sitting on the floor with this little cloth altar. I'm into the minimalist vibes with this. There's not 1,000 candles all over the room, so I'm into that.
I think this scene is super cute also. Like, all it's missing is for them to start kissing.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Aviva looks to the mirror and realizes that Kali is giving Phoebe the heat powers, which let her grow a fucking plant.
Yeah, this is where it really spins off the rails. You can throw fire, you can set things on fire, you can pop popcorn and grow plants, and this all has to do with fire?
But Prue comes in and catches them being lesbians. And right. Aviva just, like, loses her shit. Just, like, loses her mind. She's like, get out of here! This is her room! But you're in there.
And you know, it didn't occur to me until literally just now, but basically Aviva is triggered because she sees Prue acting the same way her aunt
is. Yes, that is exactly what is going on. The doorbell rings as they're having this little argument, and it's Andy. And Prue has to cancel their date again for no goddamn fucking reason.
Right? Okay, she cancels the date to deal with Aviva. Aviva literally leaves, like, 5 seconds later. Aviva and Andy are going to walk past each other, go into their cars. Like, it did not have to happen.
No, and then Aviva would be like, hey, guess what? they're witches, and then Andy would know.
And then he'd be like, who the fuck
are who are you?
Random goth girl.
Random goth girl number one. Why even give her a name? Why even give her a name? I'll go hang out with Andy, though. If Prue doesn't want to do it,
I'll bet you will.
I'll go hang out with him. I'll go to his house. I'll make him feel better. I'll bring Leo with me, and we'll have a grand old time.
Okay. All right. You know what? Just save that fantasy for later this evening. Okay. Okay, so we go back to Aviva's bedroom, and she's talking to Callie in the mirror again. It's like all she does. So, but then Aunt Jackie barges in, and she's bitching about Aviva skipping school. They get into this huge fight with Aunt Jackie yelling at her. Aviva gets all emotional, and while that's going on, Callie, in the mirror, manipulates Aviva's powers into setting Jackie's dress on fire.
Yeah.
Then Jackie freaks out and runs around just stupidly until she falls down the stairs. I have to tell you this, Aunt Jackie. Stop, drop, and roll does not mean down the stairs. I mean, she like it was just a little bit of fire on her clothing, and she's like running out the room, down the hallway, into a wall, down the stairs. It, like, I know you're panicked, but honey, come on.
It's not synonymous with thrashing wildly.
She didn't even stop, drop, and roll. She, like, ran, dropped, and rolled.
down the fucking stairs. The EMTs take Jackie away, and Callie is just gleaming with excitement.
Your powers are growing.
And then she's like, go fucking kill Prue and take her place, please.
Basically, and then Aviva's like, okay, I will.
Okay, fine. I just set my aunt on fire, but it's fine.
So Aviva goes back to the Halliwell Manor with her sob story, and inexplicably they, like, let her in.
Yeah.
She wants to spend the night with them, and Prue is like, fine, but no magic.
AKA, no lesbian fucking.
I know! Exactly what I was gonna say! It had this vibe of, like, fine, you can stay, but no fucking my sister. Later that night, in a mirror of their house... Apparently, Kali can be in any mirror.
I guess so.
Kali shows up in a mirror and tells Aviva to get up and go kill Prue. And Aviva's like, okay. She, like, gets out of bed and goes down the hallway. She opens Prue's door, and she's just prepared to kill her, I guess, while she sleeps. But luckily, Piper, who has this frequent nighttime urination problem, I guess, interrupts her. And Aviva's like, oh, I was looking for the bathroom, and in the process, I stared at your sleeping sister.
It's kind of problematic that they gave this character queer undertones and then made her predatory.
Mm-hmm. But don't they fucking love to do that?
They sure do. Also, Aviva kind of gives me, like, Nancy Downs vibes.
She does. You know, they were probably actually a little bit inspired by Nancy Downs because the craft did come out prior to this.
True.
And Nancy is iconic, and they may have even referenced her without consciously thinking about it just because Nancy Downs is so iconic.
Yeah, but I just found it, like, I found it super funny that they gave this character that had these really intense queer vibes, and I know I've been making fun of the fact that she's so into Phoebe, but, like, I found it kind of offensive that they gave her these queer undertones and then made her, like, sneak into someone's room to harm her in some way.
And, like, yeah you're absolutely right.
Don't like that.
It's gross.
But the next morning, Prue is planning to go see Jackie in the hospital. And when she gets there, Aunt Jackie says that Aviva's into all this weird stuff like black magic and voodoo. But, okay, here's the thing. Neither one of those things is evil. And the word black magic itself has a lot of racist undertones in the first place.
Well, and the fact that voodoo is seen as evil witchcraft is a whole racist issue in itself, because it's actually just a whole flipping religion.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that Aunt Jackie says black magic and voodoo is, like, spot on for her character.
Yeah.
Because she's this upstanding Christian white lady waitress who just took in her goddamn niece. She hates her so much. Why the fuck can't her mom stop taking drugs? I hate black magic!
I can't with it.
Did I sum that up correctly?
I think that was pretty good. That was a good one. She says that she's surprised that Aviva didn't sacrifice Kit, which again is offensive. And Jackie says that she only has to put up with this dumb kid until her mom gets out of rehab.
Let's just not gloss over this whole sacrificing the cat comment. If you're out there and you believe that witches are about killing cats, you are 100% mistaken.
Mistaken.
Because we don't kill them, honey. We collect them.
Yes. I mean,
I have three, and it is not enough.
At Quake, this is just a short little scene where we realize that Andy has been stood up by Prue again, so she could go to the fucking hospital. She couldn't have gone after lunch. She was going to be there all day. She's admitted in the hospital. Like, right. Jackie wasn't going anywhere. Go have your lunch date and then go talk to the Strange Girl's aunt, okay?
But she just straight up forgot about it and didn't even call
him. She did not even call him. Ugh. But Andy's done. He's like, fuck this shit, I'm out. And he leaves.
Is it also sad that this is probably, like, not even the first time he's been stood up at Quake, because it is the only restaurant in San Francisco?
You gotta, well, I mean, it's the only restaurant that Prue doesn't have to pay for her food because her sister works.
Do you know, well, that, I guess, is a good point that she probably doesn't have to pay. But why is it that if Prue desperately wants to be on a date without Piper around, that she goes to the restaurant where she works?
Good.
I'm just saying.
Well, because this isn't a sex date, it's a lunch date. Well, I mean, I guess it could be a sex date.
Okay, well, I haven't dated in, like, 200 years, so I don't know these rules.
That's fair. And then, after that short little Quake scene, Prue goes into Aviva's bedroom and snoops around, and Kali watches Prue in the mirror as Prue reads Aviva's journal, which is a super huge invasion of privacy, by the way.
Well, I think at this point, we're kind of just feared. I'd read the bitch's journal. I'd be like, what is this little slut up
to? I mean, fair enough. But I just, like, her journal sort of seems like it might be her book of shadows, and I just find something, like, the very uncool about reading that. But
I do agree. But I'm also, even though I hardcore identify with Aviva, I'm seeing it from Prue's POV here, because Aviva showed up at her house with this sob story about how her aunt got horribly injured. And Prue's like, I kind of already don't trust you, and now you're telling me something terrible happened to the person that you live with when you attacked my popcorn and my fucking videotape just yesterday.
Fair enough.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And also, she just found out that she lied about finding Kit and that she had her in her closet for a while.
Yeah.
I'd read the bitch's journal.
Yeah, okay.
I'd be like,
okay,
this little harlot is alone with my sister trying to sex her up with her flaming-ass fingers. And I'm not having it.
I'm trying not to lose my mind at flaming-ass fingers. Okay. But anyway, she finds out that Aviva is up to some shenanigans, up to no good, with her flaming ass fingers. And then we transition into the next scene, and I'll let you go, because I need a minute.
So Aviva's journal specifically says, Kali says we're close to taking over the Halliwell coven. I hate lying to them.
They're not a coven, though. They're not a coven.
They're not even close to a coven. They're just, whatever. But the point is, now Prue knows that Aviva is in league with someone named Kali, so she can look her up in the Book of Shadows just conveniently with enough time to know how to defeat her later. So, plot point there. Prue calls Phoebe and tells her not to let Aviva out of her sight. And then Phoebe is like, sure. And then she does that exact thing.
Phoebe's just fucking everything up.
Yeah, she says she's a grew up. Phoebe tells Aviva that Prue is coming home. Aviva goes upstairs to lie in wait in Prue's bedroom and prepare to throw fire at her and kill her. Then there's this little scene where we're reinforcing the queer undertones again. Leo says he's about done with the house, and then he looks at Phoebe and he's like, are you and Aviva... never mind. And then Phoebe's like, well, that would be really inappropriate because I'm like 24 and she's like 16.
Exactly.
I'm just kidding. She doesn't say that, but it's pretty flippin' obvious. Phoebe wants to know, wait, what did Piper say about me? And Leo won't tell her. So then Phoebe says this thing, which is equally problematic to the gay and lesbian joke. Actually, maybe more so.
Yeah.
Phoebe says, well, whatever Piper says, take it with a grain of salt, because sometimes her medication makes her say strange things. But don't worry, her shrinks are on it.
Ew!
And this, yeah, this crack exists to basically say, oh no, you don't want to date Piper, she's mentally ill.
Yeah. Fuck that. Fuck that.
That sort of thing passed a lot more without objections than it would now, for sure. But this joke did not age well. It used to be just sort of a common thing to make fun of people with mental illnesses. It still is a common thing, but at least people are becoming more outspoken and more understanding about it now.
Yeah.
But for that reason, this joke does not.
It doesn't age well.
Not at all. However, since we did have sort of the culmination of the gay vibe between Aviva and Phoebe in this scene, I do want to talk about it a little bit. We've been referencing that Aviva is queer-coded, you know, through the whole podcast, really. She's definitely an outcast. She's a goth. Or she's in the gothic style, which doesn't automatically mean LGBTQ, but there's definitely some crossover there. Mm-hmm. Definitely. At least there has been for me. She acts super, super into Phoebe, obviously. And then the writers added this joke of Leo thinking that Phoebe and Aviva are dating.
Oh my god, is that their ship name? Aviva?
Aviva? Yeah, I love it. Unfortunately, this is the only queer reference we're going to see in this show for a very long time. And by that, I mean not until season 6. And just to remind you, we're currently on season 1.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's 7. Season 7.
Oh, yeah, it is season 7.
Yeah, not even 6. The crack about the gay and lesbian group, this is the only time they will say the word lesbian in the entire show. And there's only one other time that they will say the word gay. So when I say a stark lack of queer characters in a show based in San Francisco that at this point feels comfortable making jokes about homosexuality, I'm not kidding.
No, it's...
I am not kidding.
It's rough. It's really rough. In a somewhat recent Instagram Live, Rose McGowan, in an agreement to a fan comment on that live, that Paige should have been gay. If it were like 5 years later, we had a network that was very old-fashioned and a lot of producers on the show that were really old-fashioned.
That would have been fantastic. I honestly think Paige should have been bisexual, personally.
Ooh, yes.
But at the point that it was going on, the network and the producers were just not having it. So in an earlier episode of this podcast, I claimed that Aaron Spelling was homophobic and that's why there were no queer characters in Charmed. I would like to retract that claim right now because I did dig in and try to do my research on this. And I found quite a few quotes from Aaron Spelling that said that he was very supportive of having queer characters on television and he was very happy when that success arrived. It seems like he wasn't necessarily pushing for it, but he wasn't standing in the way of it. According to Rose McGowan, some of the Charmed producers were against having queer characters on the show, but we just don't, unfortunately, have a way of knowing who they were. So we can't put a face to blame on the issue.
Yeah.
I know that I read an article about this a long time ago. And I scoured the internet trying to find it, and I just could not. Literally, the only information out there on the subject of queer representation in this show was Rose McGowan's comment in their Instagram Live, and that was just, like, 2 or 3 months ago. So, yeah. I don't know, maybe the story has just been buried, or no one's talking about it anymore. I have no idea. I cannot give you a further explanation than that. But I would like to sum up this point with a quote from Margaret Cho. I love any opportunity to quote Margaret Cho. Okay? So, talking about the lack of queer representation in this show and the gay jokes they made in this episode. In one of her comedy specials, Margaret Cho, very enthused and passionate on the topic, said, You do not get to pick and choose what you like about our culture while leaving behind the burden of inequality. And fuck yes. Yeah, Margaret.
Oh my God, live, Margaret. Yes. I love that. And I think it really does apply here. To just, I don't know. And I mean, it's a problem with the shows of this time period in general. But obviously we're past it and things are changing. But it still sucks that it happened. It still sucks that it happened. And honestly, the whole thing of using witchcraft as a metaphor for gayness, I love it because it applies to me. But also it's a way to dance around the issue that I don't particularly care for. I mean, Joss Whedon did it in Buffy and he did it on purpose to get the relationship with Willow and Tara in there. And those are the kinds of ways that I enjoy it. But in this episode where it's like, that's not the point, and it just sort of danced around the issue, I have a little bit of a problem with it. Yeah. You know?
So I want to add Aviva's assumptive lesbianism to the list of reasons that she's struggling with her life and was probably drawn to witchcraft. And to cap off, I guess, your point, I think that, and I think there's a lot of proof and documentation of this out there somewhere. But I think witchcraft is a home for a lot of queer people because we were all sort of kicked out of the religions we were raised in.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why there is such a crossover between witchcraft and queerness. But that is something that should be honored in the right way, not in the way that we're seeing here.
In the next scene, Phoebe has a premonition of Aviva killing Prue with a fireball. And Leo then immediately announces that Prue is home. So again, an instance of Phoebe's premonitions not really giving her that much foresight.
And yet, this is a perfect fucking point. They say Prue is the most powerful, but if not for Phoebe's premonition right now, do you know what Prue would be? Fucking dead.
Charcoal briquette. Hit in the face with a fireball. Done.
Dunzo.
Literally done. Completely just...
I don't know how Aviva thought she would start dating Phoebe after killing her sister, but I know that when you're a teenager, you don't always have these plans worked out.
Exactly. But Phoebe goes up to confront Aviva and just barely misses getting hit by the fireball because she puts up a sweater or something and it catches on fire and she's like, oh, fuck. And she does the right thing by putting it down.
Yeah, she doesn't throw herself down the stairs.
She doesn't, like, completely just launch herself down the stairwell and give herself a broken arm and a concussion, Jackie. Phoebe's arm is burnt from this experience, and she has an ice pack on it, and Phoebe tells her sisters what happened, and Prue reveals that Aviva is actually being manipulated by this evil, creepy white bitch.
Evil, creepy white bitch. All right, so Aviva has run home and gone back to her bedroom. She's planning to run away. She's packing up her things in her bag. And Kali shows up in the mirror, not summoned, and says, bitch, not so fast. Aviva.
Where are you going, Aviva?
Aviva says she's hurting people and she doesn't want to be a witch anymore. And Kali's like, okay, touch the mirror and I'll go away too and take your powers away. And Aviva's like, I'm totally going to fall for that. So Aviva touches the mirror and then becomes possessed by Kali. This is another thing that the actual Kali would never do. She would never possess a human because she's like 8,000 times more powerful than humans. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah. Also, this is another instance that invalidates Aviva's path. She doesn't want to be a witch anymore, so her powers get taken away. And it just, I don't know, the whole thing that happens, her entire story just really pisses me off because everything that happens makes it feel like she's not a real witch, and she is. Everything that she's doing is legitimate.
Right,
witchcraft.
Well, and here, we're actually... So this is a fucking trope that people really believe. That if you get involved with witchcraft, you could get possessed by a demon. Like, people actually believe that. And not all of them are crazy fundamentalist Christians. Like, people believe that. And that's literally what's happening right in front of us now.
Yeah, I want to add, if you are blossoming into witchcraft, or even if you're an experienced practitioner that's trying something new... if you're working with a spirit or an energy or a deity and it's making you feel uncomfortable or asking you to do things that are putting yourself or others in harm's way, you can say no. You can You have the ability to break that connection and you don't have to work with that energy anymore. Nothing can have power over you if you don't let it.
Yeah, I would just say that just approach everything with respect and research. Lots of research. Don't always believe the first source you find for certain. You know, really, anything you do can be dangerous or have a negative consequence if it's done carelessly. But I don't agree that witchcraft is so much more dangerous than anything else you could possibly do, when really a lot of it's not that different from any other religious or spiritual practice.
The sisters have read up on Kali in their Book of Shadows, and they learn that they have to shatter her reflection to kill her. Okay, cool. Saving some money on Adobe After Effects, I guess. And the possessed Aviva barges in and starts throwing fire everywhere. She's like, check out my flaming fingers, and just fucking...
Okay, can we talk about how hilarious possessed Aviva is, though? Because oh she, like, shifts back and forth from being herself to being Kali, and, like, Kali's voice coming out of her mouth is so bad and funny.
It's the same demonic synthesizer it's that they so put on bad. Jeremy.
But, like, Aviva's like, Phoebe, help me! And then her eyes glow red, and then she's like, never mind!
Yes. And then they realize... by some fucking stroke of genius and continuity errors, that if they freeze the room, Kali will freeze, but Aviva will not because she's a good witch. They freeze the room, Aviva falls to the ground, and then the frozen Kali is standing there, all creppy with her long robes and her hands up in the air. And then Phoebe is like, Prue, get her to the mirror! And then they fucking launch this stunt double through the air, and you get this just like funny shot of the stunt double's arms up in the air and their hair blowing back, and it's just like and then she falls into the mirror, and it's just, it's so goofy looking every time. I don't think there was any reason for them to show the stunt double just like up on a wire. It looks so bad.
It's probably the worst. It's one of the worst throws, man.
Yeah, it's really bad. It looks like she just, like, got up on the back of the couch and jumped off. She gets stuck in the mirror, and she's like, no! And then Phoebe is like, fuck yeah, bitch, and, like, picks up some metal thing, I don't know, and smashes the mirror. Now, whose bad luck is that? Is it Phoebe's?
Well, I would say it's definitely Kali's.
Yeah, because she, you know, she dies. That effect, though, is really cool when you see, like, her face and all of the different shards of glass when it's falling down. That looks cool. The shards of glass look bad, but the effect on top of
them... Can we talk about, though, how they didn't even do what they said they were going to do? Because they put her in the mirror and then shattered the mirror. They did not shatter her reflection. I know.
You're right.
I know.
You're right.
But anyway...
Anyway, the demon is defeated, and we transition into the next scene.
Okay, so everything's all cool now that Kali is gone. And Phoebe is sort of giving Aviva this send-off. She's given her one of Prue's dresses for absolutely no reason that I can discern.
Yeah, Aviva had
clothes.
I don't
know why she had to change her clothes. But this is actually... It sort of references, get this, another trope. That you saw a lot in the 90s, especially, where you have this troubled kid who has a goth aesthetic, and then when they're all better at the end, they look more normal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. I definitely know what you're talking about, for sure.
Aviva is not wearing her dark lipstick anymore, and I swear to God, her hair is lighter.
It does look a little lighter, but I don't think it's slicked back
as
hard.
Yeah, and her eye makeup is lighter. Just everything about her is, like, less black. Less goth, basically, and this signifies to us that her life is all better now.
She's not a witch anymore.
Which is bullshit, by the way, because goth fashion is awesome, and that's all I have to say about it, and just because you're wearing it doesn't mean that you're depressed. It just means you look fucking cool.
Exactly, and like I said up top of Eva Girl, you're still a witch, honey. Just because you don't have the power to shoot fire out of your hands anymore doesn't mean you're not a witch.
Yeah,
now.
So Aviva is just sort of like, well, I still suck. She says, I'm going to miss this, having powers, having sisters. And Phoebe's like, well, you never had sisters. But anyway, Now, if I stoop down like this and talk to you like we're in an after-school special, will you pinky swear promise not to tell anyone we're witches?
I promise.
So anyway, that's done. That's a wrap on Aviva.
That's a wrap on Aviva. A series wrap on Aviva. We never see her again. We transition into the next scene, and Prue waits outside Andy's apartment to try to apologize to him, but he's like, just over it. He's like, I don't want to be stood up anymore. You never have a good explanation for anything. And Prue is like, well, I practice witchcraft, and I don't know if I can tell you that. But I essentially tell you that all the time without actually saying the word.
Basically, she's like, my life has just gotten sort of complicated.
Exactly what I was going to say. My life is just so complicated. I don't know if I can share it with anybody. My life is so complicated. Andy is like, you know, that sucks. When it's maybe less complicated, give me a call. And we're left on this note of them not really knowing if they're broken up or not. But I'll go comfort Andy.
Yeah, you were just waiting for Prue to fuck things up, weren't you?
I sure was. I will swoop in and give a sympathy, Andy. What are your final thoughts on this episode?
My final thoughts, I guess, are that this could have been a good episode, and a character like Aviva could have gone in an entirely different direction, maybe in some sort of helpful role, rather than the duped victim. I thought that the representation of Aviva was good up to a point. It's really just what happens to her that I have an issue with, not necessarily the way that she acts. And everything with Prue's relationship is dumb.
I would agree with you. I like this episode. I do really enjoy it. But I do have issues with the way that Aviva's story plays out. I would have liked to see her maybe keep her powers, or even just, you know, discover that she had powers of her own in some other way, just from practicing witchcraft. And that's something that I would like to see in this show just in general.
And then, of course, there's the huge problem. I would have 99% less problems with this episode if they would have just given the villain a different fucking name. Why'd you have to name her Kali? Why?
There was no reason. There was no reason. They just did it to do it. Like you said, it's just a name they associated with something bad, because everything that's not Judeo-Christian is evil. But if I were going to rate this episode, I would give it, you know, I really liked it. I'm going to give it 10 candles setting on fire 10 dresses.
I would have to give this episode 25 out of 25 stair steps, and I hit every single one on the way down.
We really only had one actual death in this episode, but I think if I were going to give this episode like a kill of the day, it would probably be Andy and Prue's relationship.
Damn it, that's what I was going to say.
I'm just really excited.
100% agree.
To get in there myself. Kill of the day. Siren, where can the people find you?
Oh, hey girl, hey. You can follow my meme page on Facebook, Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. You can also follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular. And finally, you can watch my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me at a new Instagram handle, actually. Fire_made_flesh. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. I'm experimenting with using my magical name in public spaces. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or something you'd like to hear us talk about, please send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com. And until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?